Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, and welcome to Indie Streak. My name is Rachel Galvin, and as you know, I interview film industry professionals on this show. If you've missed any of the shows, you can go back and listen to the archives. Last week, I interviewed the whole cast and crew of Planet X films, Journey to Planet X and Planet X, and all of their films that they're doing. And it was kind of a crazy show. We had audio for the first time, and we also played with a conference call, so it was a little different. But today we're back to normal, and I have the director, Jesse Quiñones, who I have interviewed before, but we're going to go in-depth into his film, Callous Hands, and talk about some of his other projects. And I think I have him on the line. Let me see here. Okay, hold on. Jesse, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, for those that didn't hear the interview last time, why don't you fill us in again on the plot of Calloused Hands so that everybody knows what it's about?
Yeah, Calloused Hands is set in Miami. It's loosely based on my own life, and it's about a young boy named Josh who is 12 years old who has a stepfather by the name of Bird that's played by Andre Royo from The Wire. And Bird wants Josh to be, you know, this baseball star like the next Alex Rodriguez, and he pushes him, practicing with him, and you know, really trying to get that American dream. But Bird is also an alcoholic and a crack addict, and, you know, he's abusive to Josh at the same time, and also abusive to Josh's mother, Debbie. It's played by Daisy Hager, who a lot of people might know from the show Episodes. And so Josh's mother, Debbie, reaches this point where she needs to get help to her estranged father, Solomon. And her father says, you know, I'll help under one condition, and that's that my grandson, Josh, has a bar mitzvah. So Josh starts preparing for this bar mitzvah and kind of starts bonding with his rabbi, Rabbi Brookstein, and kind of in that process has a sort of an experience of self-discovery. So the film's kind of about this one boy who comes of age, but it's also about all the characters kind of coming of age in their own separate ways.
Mm-hmm. And how difficult was it to, we talked a little bit last time about how this was your life story and how difficult that was, but were there elements that you felt were just not interesting that you needed to embellish? Or were there some things that you took out that you thought, you know, that's not going to be working with the script? Or how did you decide what to keep in and what to take out?
I think it was like, you know, you have like 97 minutes. And obviously, I wrote a book years ago, and it kind of was like 250, 300 pages. And then the film was a little slice of that book that I took out. And you know, it was more like, I think the majority of what's in the film is true. It was more like moving things around, just to kind of make it work in the three-act structure and within the kind of time frame. So it's more just shifting points. Like, for instance, the boy, Josh, is actually not only based on me, he's also based on my brother, but just felt more, it just worked better to have it as one kid rather than two brothers, you know? And it was things, little things like that, like the rabbi. I didn't actually meet the rabbi until, you know, by the time I met the rabbi, my stepfather was already out of the picture. But it just worked better to have him there to kind of have this almost triangular type relationship between the rabbi, the stepfather, and the boy. So it was just mm-hmm. It was more kind of shifting things around.
And what was the book that you were talking about? What's the title?
Same title.
Okay.
It was the same
title. Great.
Yeah, I started it after like 13 years ago, and I worked on it a long time and tried to get it published, but it never happened. And in a way, I'm kind of happy it didn't happen, because I would never have made the film if that mm-hmm. happened. So I think in a way I needed to work on it all those years and sit with the story and let it kind of just, you know, simmer inside of me. And then when I was ready to tell it, you know, I kind of took the very best part of it and made that into the film.
Mm-hmm. And you had a lot of kids around the baseball field. How was it to work with the kids?
Kids are really cool to work with. They kind of I find that the less you do with them, the better. You know, I don't because mm-hmm. you know, when you're working with an actor that say has gone to to drama school and has years and years of experience under their belt, and they kind of have a toolkit, you know, that's, and mm-hmm. every actor works in a different way, but eventually, you know, after a little time, you start to plug in on what their triggers are, you know, and with kids, they don't really have that toolkit yet, and it's all kind of instinctive, and you know, so with the kids that we had, it was more just sort of, you know, using, the kids that I cast them because they were kind of close to the character for whatever reason, you know, and so I found kids that had similarities to the characters they were playing. So it wasn't necessarily having them pretend or be something else. It was more drawing the qualities that they had already and kind of using and pulling those things into the film.
Had they played baseball before?
No, and that was one thing I was really impressed. The main kid, Josh, Luca Oriel, he had never played before, and, you know, his dad and his mom and dad were taking him to practice out in L.A. for months. So when he came out there, you know, he was fielding ground balls, and, like, he actually looked like a proper ball player. And then they told me he never played before. He was just practicing.
Wow.
And it was just so impressive. I mean, that's one of the – that kid, you know, he's one of the hardest-working young actors I know. I mean, he learned how to do his bar mitzvah prayer better than I did back when I was doing the proper bar mitzvah. So he was really impressive. And all the kids, they were great. You know, they were really professional, really took it serious. You know, they were really, I think they're all real serious young actors, you know.
Mm-hmm. It was interesting how you had an element of showing how if someone is abused at home, they turn around and they do it to others. And was that something
yeah.
that you experienced yourself?
You kind of that's that cycle that happens to you, you know, mm-hmm. you kind of, you absorb
lash
whatever's
out.
Around you. Can you hear me?
Yeah,
you lash out and, you kind of absorb it and you put it out. I mean, I remember when I was growing up, you know, I was around, you know, violence and aggression, and I became that way for a while. You know, I used to fight with my brother a lot and things like that. And, you know, it definitely, it's something. And I think it was important to show that this wasn't just some little innocent lamb. You know, he was sort of, and just purely a victim that, you know, he started to, through the story, he started to kind of absorb it and become it. And that was sort of the worst possible scenario, that he eventually would become what he was, you know, experiencing. And that was sort of the choice that he could have gone down that road if
yeah.
you know, perhaps he didn't meet somebody like Rabbi Brookstein and change.
Yeah, that seemed to be kind of a turning point in the film, really.
Yeah, because I think that's the sort of, yeah, that's the point when I think there it became a sort of a realization for the mother and for the boy too, you know. I think that it was a turning point for me in my own life, you know, that where, you know, you kind of see what you're becoming and sort of almost subconscious and stuff like that. So I think that you know, you're all, I guess it's like that accountability, and that he wanted to become accountable and the mother wanted to become accountable, and it needed something like that, something really drastic to wake them up a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you had some great locations. We talked a little bit about that before, but I didn't ask you, you know, you had a diner, ball field, synagogue, everything. Did you need permits for any of that, or were there any restrictions in when you could film on any of the locations?
Yeah, we had permits for everywhere. Maybe a few, I mean, I guess probably say now, but a few exterior, like walking on the street, that was a bit more run and gun, you know, hop in the van,
uh-huh.
shoot it, hop back in the van. But all the other stuff was legit, located. I mean, we barely spent anything on locations because we had, you know, I think everyone, you know, was really excited about the film and it was really supportive. I think the budget we spent on locations, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it wasn't much. You know, I don't think it's what most films spend. And I think that was down to people just being really excited about what we were doing. And, you know, a few of them were tricky. Like the synagogue, we were initially planning to shoot for like 2 days, 3 days, and we ended up only shooting for 1 day. So not 1 day alone, we had like 50 setups or something like that. And we
wow.
had to shift some of the scenes that took place in the synagogue to the rabbi's house. which was, you know, it was like a lot of I was doing a lot of rewriting during the shoot. Like, we lose a location, all right, we've got to write this location in to a different place. So, which is, it was a great kind of experience for me as a writer-director, and it's kind of, I think that's why sometimes it's there's an added advantage when you're a writer-director, because you don't have to depend on a writer to, okay, we need this rewritten somehow, however way. I could count on myself to do that, and that's sort of was really handy, you know. So after a day shooting, I'd say, okay, I gotta work on the scene and put it in this place.
I know originally you had a stage reading of your script. How effective was that?
That was really effective. I had two, actually. I had one in London and one in L.A. And I come from a theater background, so I really liked that process. It's something really common in theater to kind of, you know, I don't think it worked for every kind of script. Like, I don't think if you were doing, like, say, Batman, you know, I don't think a stage reading would be very useful, because so much of the film is in the visuals. But the stuff I do tends to be very character-driven and more dialogue. And for me, it's a really great way to just gauge the rhythm and how the characters are working. And I'm actually, for my next script I'm working on, I'm actually planning another stage reading for that. Just same thing, just to kind of work through the holes that I might have and things like that. And it's also a great way to audition. You know, I don't, like, from the last, for Callous Hands, two of the actors that I ended up using in the stage reading ended up in the film. And I'm kind of, I always sort of keep that in mind, you know, not every actor that I use in the stage reading would necessarily be in the film, but I always keep my eye on it, you know, and how do they respond to the material and what kind of ways they might surprise me, even though they're sticking to the script, how would they surprise me? So that kind of always is in the back of my mind, you know.
Did you make changes after the stage reading?
Yeah, I mean, I went through like 38 drafts of the script, so I made... After the first reading, I made a number of changes, and after the second one, there was quite a few changes as well. And then just tweaking, and you know, but then it's funny, it's like when you bring the actors on, then they bring their own flavor to it, and then it becomes a whole other thing. So,
I know you use a lot of improv too, right?
Yeah, I would say the film has about 20% improvisation, like the dialogue, something like that.
Now, what type of camera did you use?
We use a Red Scarlett for most of it.
Okay, and, did you like working with it?
Yeah, it was just the one we had, like, for our budget, and because we were doing very handheld style shooting, I think probably like one shot was on a tripod. I don't even know if it was one, maybe none. And the majority, it was just, it's a nice little camera, but a good quality, and it was the one we had the best deal on, so we used that. And then for all the exteriors, like the big kind of big shots of the city and the car, I'm driving, those were all done on the Red One. And that was, so it was those two cameras.
Did you have a whole lighting kit for all your lighting sequences and inside?
Yeah, we had a really solid gaff for Andy Futo, who did the gaffing, and our DP, Fabio Dominguez, and I think that we tried to kind of give it a sort of a natural look, you know, to make it kind of feel a little dirty, a little gritty, and make it feel like you're looking at a real life, you know, that you're and that was also part of the shooting style, was to make you feel like you're looking at a real life, you weren't looking at some glossy thing, because I think sometimes, you know, a lot of the films I see that come out of Miami, at least in the past, they have a really clean look and a really glossy look. And, you know, I wanted it to feel kind of dirty and feel like, you know, you're looking at real lives and real issues, and you were almost inside their lives, you know?
Mm-hmm. And did you storyboard originally?
A few scenes we storyboarded, but for the most part, it was more doing a shot list. Because I found, you know, even the scenes that we storyboarded, you get on set, you kind of, you know, you feel your way around the location, and you just start getting new ideas that... make it flow better, you know. So it was some of this, like the stuff in the synagogue was storyboarded and a few other baseball things, but then the most part it was more like, you know, having some shot lists of what we want, you know, and the other thing is because we only shot in 18 days, we had to be really strict with our amount of shots. I think we had like 4 or 5 setups per scene. So we would be really, we would have to really restrict ourselves in what kind of shots we'd get. So we kind of, we sort of had a certain kind of idea what we would do before we got in there. But it was more about shot lists, you know, and mm-hmm. going in with that in mind. But then also trying to like let the, you know, once you're there, letting that kind of the location and with guys how we would shoot it as well, you know.
Did you sit down with your DP and kind of go over what you wanted, or did he input a lot and say, no, I think this would be better, or how did that work?
Yeah, it was a really collaborative thing. There was like one film in particular that we used as a reference, which is this film called The Kid with the Bike. I think it's from Belgium. And we used that as a kind of a guide. Partly, it was more for a practical reason, but I also thought, because I liked the way it was, it's basically a shot in a very, where it keeps the audience very removed. It's almost every scene is one take, one shot for every scene. You know, it's like, you know, the way someone's kind of cut back and forth. With these, it kind of kept the camera back, and it almost felt like theater in that way, where it allowed the performances to sort of breathe, and it just sort of kept and created this distance. And I think that's what we kind of... Because we knew we'd only have about enough time to do like four setups per scene, or we kind of said, you know, what's the best way to capture this, you know, without looking like it's not, we don't have enough shots. And so we felt that if we kept the camera kind of back and created a distance and let the performances sort of breathe and interact with each other and let the actors sort of just sort of flow, it would get that same feeling. So that was a big reference for us to do that.
Yeah, that really worked, too, because you really get drawn into the characters. I found it to be a very emotional film. I was crying, to tell you the truth.
Thank you.
I cried
when I made it. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Now, how long were your shoot days? Were they long days?
No, it was standard. We had our main actor was a kid, so we had to kind of... I think he only was allowed to work like 7 or so hours a day. So we would obviously would schedule around him. And I think typically the standard, you know, like 14 hours per day.
Well, usually it's less than that. usually it's, you know, once you get 12 hours, that's golden time at that point.
We might have done 12. I might.
But, you know, it's Miami, so anything can happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Tell me about the music in the film, because I know you work with some different musicians for some of the songs, and tell me, we didn't really talk about that, so talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, no, we had two songs from this singer called Diane Ward, who she's based in Miami. Yeah, I think a lot of people in Miami know of her. She's somebody that I like. My mom used to take me to these old bars, like when I was 14, 15 years old, to listen to her play. And I just always loved her music, you know. And when I started writing the script, I use music when I write. I always have some kind of music that helps me get into a little bit of a zone when I'm writing. And I just found that when I listened to her music, it just sort of took me back to that time, that I, you know, that period that I was trying to capture when I actually. Was making the film, I thought her music just would be perfect for it. You know, just the tone and everything about it. And then the other one we used was a young rapper called Adequate that I found through a friend of mine who I just liked his rap. You know, I thought it was really great, and it kind of had something tied into what was happening in the plot. And then we had a fantastic composer called Rob Persaud, who is based, he's actually from London, but he lives in LA now, so we had that connection because I live in London. And I just think he did a beautiful score. You know, he was a really sensitive composer, and I think enhanced the whole thing. You know, and really made you feel it. You know, it's a very emotional score.
Yeah, and your makeup was fantastic. Who did the makeup?
That was a young makeup artist called Nancy Mendoza, who's fantastic. You know, and I think, you know, she was just amazing, because there were all these really tricky things, you know, the scars and the bruises and things like that. And she was such a creative, you know, makeup artist, you know, and I pretty much like a one-man band, you know, doing everything by herself. And anybody that's in Miami that needs a makeup artist, I highly recommend. I would definitely work with her
Mendoza,
again.
Right?
Nancy Mendoza, she's just fantastic. Just really creative, too. Like, you know, using, you know, some, you know, like, for instance, you know, Bert, our main character, had like a beard, and you know, he had a haircut the first day, and we shaved his hair, and then she was like stitching his hair onto his face, and you couldn't even tell, you know.
Wow.
It was amazing. You know, so it was like when he had all scruffy beard, it was because she kind of like, I don't know how she did it, but she just got it on his face, and it looked amazing. So I mean, just a really, you know, it's like an artist, you know, and everybody has their own department, they're all artists, you know, and there is, you know, she's somebody really proud of what she does as well, which I just think is amazing, you know.
Yeah, she did a great job. And the cast did a great job. The cast, the acting was fantastic. Has anyone kind of gotten a bump from this movie? Like Andre Royo, has he gone out there and, you know, I saw some reviews saying this is a breakthrough role for him. Has he gotten anything since then that came from this?
I mean, not that I know. Like, I think he's gotten fantastic reviews. I mean, in the Miami Herald, the Miami New Times. I mean, I think, you know, he's kind of the lead in the film. And I don't think people have really seen him carry a movie like this. And I think, I can't imagine it would do anything but good for him because, you know, he really just, he has an amazing arc as a cast. Just really, I think he's an amazing actor to work with. And I hope that people can, you know, see that and recognize that. And same for the others. I mean, Daisy, you know, she's normally known as a comedic actress, and I think this is one of the first times she's really sunk her teeth into a dramatic role like this, and I thought she was just so brave. I mean, and she did some pretty heavy stuff, you know. She was, having a breakdown and all that, and, you know, the day before that happened, she cut her head open in a taxi, you know, and had like 6 stitches in her head. And you know, had to then the next day do this really intense scene. And I mean, it's like these actors, it's not for me, it's like kind of, they don't want just acting. It's like a real, they were really giving something special to this. And the young boy, Luca, and Sean McConaughey, who played the rabbi. I mean, these are some amazing actors.
Mm-hmm. And you had a showing at the Miami International Film Festival. How did that go?
It was amazing. It was our world premiere. I couldn't imagine a better place to have a world premiere. You know, we screened at the Regal Cinema, which is, you know, when I was a kid, that's where my dad used to take me to the movies. And, you know, to go back and show my first feature film there was just amazing. We sold out both shows and, you know, had a very beautiful reception, and family and friends and just people from Miami. So it was beautiful.
And you have the London, UK Film Focus Fest coming up, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's coming up in June 24th. So that'll be our premiere in the UK. That'll be the first time the film's being shown in the UK. They just sort of released a press release in Cannes. And, we're really excited about that. That's, you know, because I'm living in London. So after Miami, this is kind of like the second most important place for me to show the film. And that'll be for sales agents and distributors. So, you know, we're really hopeful that we can pick up UK distribution out of this, you know.
Mm-hmm. Have you had any other word about distribution?
Yeah, I can talk a little bit about it. We have... been picked up for North American distribution, which we're really, really excited about. I can't say who with because, you know, I got to leave it to them to release the press release and all that. But we have North American distribution, and later this year, there will be a way for anybody that can't check it out in a film festival that can actually go and watch this movie. So we're really excited about that because, you know, a lot of films, they get made and, you know, you don't know what's going to happen with them. So now that we kind of have a home on that front, we're really excited because it just sort of takes a weight off of our back. You know, we know that the film's going to get out there and that people can go and see it.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you get the distribution? Is it was it through the film festival or through other means?
I think the festival definitely helped, you know, just give us a platform so we could show it and get reviewed. And then, a lot of credit has to go to our producer, Paula Crickard, who is based out here in London as well. And, I mean, you know, to be honest, I have a producer who kind of pulled that one together, and she's been amazing getting us that. And I feel confident that she's going to get us distribution in the UK or Europe as well. Because, I mean, you know, this woman is, like, tenacious and just after it. So I think it's really down to her.
Do you want to give out the website so people can check out all the details and everything of the film?
Yes. It's www.callousedhandsmovie.com.
Okay, great. And now you're in London, and you graduated from the London Metropolitan University, right?
Yeah.
Out there. And now you took classes at, is it called, pronounced Barnall? Barnall? the talent campus? Did you take classes out there too recently?
Oh, yeah, the Berlinale talent campus. Yeah. It's part of the
Berlin. Tell me what that is.
Yeah, that's like a, it's like a 7-day, it's like a mixture of workshops and seminars, and they select, I think like, they have like 4,000 filmmakers apply, and they kind of pick like 300 and all over, like from Europe and Africa and all over the world, the States. And it's like you get to meet some, you mix with other filmmakers, you attend workshops and kind of like a different lab. But I went there with a documentary, but you can go there with a feature or a documentary, and it's just a way to kind of meet other filmmakers and attend these great workshops. Like when I was there, it was Paul Schrader, the guy that wrote Taxi Driver, and Isabella Rossellini, and who was some other guy, Harry Belafonte. They were kind of giving these workshops.
Wow.
It's a really amazing event. And you know, it's in also Berlin is like an amazing city. You know, it's one of my favorite places. So yeah, it was great.
Okay. And I also heard that you have a short documentary, The Cable, that is done, right?
Yeah. That's something we did, myself and my producer, Anne-Marie Goodwin, who's also one of the producers on Callous Hands, and our DP, Fabio Dominguez. And we finished that a year ago. And that just got into the Sheffield documentary videotech. So we're quite excited about that as well. And that's sort of doing the festival rounds at the same time.
What is that one about?
That one's set in Colombia, and that's about these two kids that they live. There's like this mountain, and there's a cable connecting one mountain to the other. And the only way they get to and from school is they put this potato sack onto the cable, and one of them hops into the sack, and the other one is kind of on the holding the cable, and they just basically zip across. And that's how they get to and from school. It just was like a really interesting and unusual story. And kind of like just the dangers about it and all that. And it's called The Cable. And it was an interesting film to make. Because it was meant to be a half-hour film, but then it ended up being a 12-minute short because of some safety issues out there, which I wasn't expecting, you know?
Yeah. Well, how did you find out about that?
One of my cousins, she writes the blog and I saw some story about it, and I looked at it, and I kind of started researching it, and then managed to get in touch with the community that has the cable, and then I applied for some finance through this organization out here called the Commonwealth Broadcast Association, and they gave me some money to go make it, and it was sort of it's kind of quick the way it happened. So
great.
Yeah, it was a cool film to make.
Did you finish Shoeshine Girls?
That's in post-production. That's about to be finished, hopefully, I would say, hopefully in the next month or two. It's pretty close, though. I think we're kind of like at a rough cut stage right now.
Yeah, that's another documentary.
That'll be the next film to kind of hit the festival circuit and get distribution, hopefully.
And did I hear something about a TV drama that you're doing, too?
Yeah, no, I got a drama series, like a mini series that's been optioned by this company out here called Shed Productions, which do a lot of TV series, kind of shows like Footballers' Wives and a show called Waterloo Road. So that's in development with them. And I just sort of throw everything at the wall and see what sticks, you know, because it's like the film is like that, isn't it? It's like you kind of you try, and then you just sort of wait, which iron gets hot, you know.
Mhm. What's the name of the TV drama?
I don't know if I can say it actually.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
And you also produced something called Arthur Camp.
That's
tell me
right.
about that.
Yeah,
that looks really interesting.
That was one. It was written by a writer called Ronnie McIntosh, who's based in Scotland, and who's one of my favorite people in the film industry. He's such a cool guy. And directed by Fabio, which is, and that's about
DP, right?
Yeah, he was my cinematographer, but this is a film he directed, and it's about a guy called Arthur who has this phobia of using toilets, public toilets, and he kind of finds himself in a situation where he has to because he can't. He can't avoid it, and he ends up in a toilet and kind of has a really unusual and unexpected experience with another man that's in a cubicle right next to him. And it's a comedy. It's like 3 minutes, a really fun, short, sweet film, you know? And something that
and
I'm really proud
go?
Of. That one's that's been doing the festival circuit for about a year now. I think it's been in about 10 or so festivals. It's one of those ones that I'm really proud of. Kind of a short and sweet one, you know?
Mm-hmm. Are there any other projects that I missed? Because you're doing a lot.
The next sort of main thing is I got another feature film, my second feature film that's in development. I'm actually working on the script to hopefully get a draft done by next week. And that one is been optioned by these two producers. One is Alexandra Stone. She produced films like Young Adam with Ewan McGregor and Kate Ulltwood, and another producer called Carola Ash, who made films like Goodbye, Bafana, and Malice in Wonderland. And it's kind of set between Cuba and London. And we have the Cuban ballet dancer Carlos Acosta attached to that one. So he's another person I'm really excited to work with. You know, he's kind of primarily a dancer, but I'm just really excited to see what he can do in the world of film, you know?
Now, what's that one about?
That one's about a British woman. She's a playwright, and she goes to Cuba for her 40th birthday and falls madly in love with this young Cuban playboy and brings him back to London. And it's a romantic drama about their lives in London and kind of you know, how they navigate this relationship, sort of like he exploits her for love and she uses love as exploitation. It's kind of that sort of what's in my mind as I write it.
Do you have a title for that yet?
Yeah, I do, but I'm not happy with it, so I'm planning to change it.
Untitled right now.
Yeah.
Now, is it easier to work in the film industry to get jobs in London, do you think, than it is in the States?
I don't think so. I mean, I think generally the film industry is tough, you know? I graduated from university in 2007, and I'm only making my first feature now in 2013. So it's just sort of, I think, an indication. I think most people are like that. London is definitely, I would say it's smaller than like, because I've been to LA a few times, it's smaller than LA. And in a way, for that reason, it makes it even more competitive because, you know, you have everybody from Europe coming to London to do film. And so it's very tough to you know, get you noticed and get your stuff off the ground over here because of that, I think. It's a very tough industry over here, very competitive. But for me, ideally, what I would love to do is to make films in both places. Like, I have some projects I want to do in London and some projects I want to do back in Miami. Like, I want to make more films in Miami for sure. In an ideal world, I would love to do films both here and over there.
And your family is still here, right?
Yeah, my dad's over there, and I have a lot of friends over there as well. So I have a lot of, like, if I was going to do another film in America, I would want it to be in Miami. I feel the strongest connection there, and I feel like that's a place that I would know how to tell stories, you know, and feel authentic about it.
That's the other thing with Calloused Hands is it was a great showcase of Miami. Star Island, and you saw the houses.
Yeah.
Some things that a lot more takes of Miami that a lot of films wouldn't do, you know?
Yeah, kind of. I think it was sort of like trying to show it from the inside out and show the Miami that Miamians know. And I hope, too, it's just, you know, it's a showcase for the amazing, talented people in Miami, you know, the actors that we had used from Miami, the crew from Miami, and there's a lot of people over there that I would love to work with again as well. You know, some great crew out there, some great cast as well, some really good actors.
Yeah, I saw several people I knew. I was like, oh, there's Char, there's Giselle.
Yeah.
And I saw all these people that I knew. It was kind of
crazy. Yeah, they all did great. I mean, they were really top-notch. For sure.
Okay, and you do a lot of projects for other people too. Why don't you give out your website so that people can contact you if they need your help on anything?
Yeah, I mean, I'm getting my website done at the moment, and I don't even know what the URL is going to be. So I think, right, if anybody wants to get in touch with me for now, the best way would be to go to the Calistans website, so calistansmovie.com, and I will have my new website up and running pretty soon.
Okay.
But, that, like, all my details are on the Calistans website.
Great. Well, we're running out of time, but is there anything else last minute that you want to say that you didn't get a chance to?
No, I think that's it. So I just thank you for having me and for supporting independent film. And I will have distribution news out very, very soon.
And that'll be up on your website, right?
Yeah, that'll be on the website. And I'm big on Facebook and Twitter as well. So it'll be on there too.
I noticed you haven't blogged anything since January. So
that's
January's lesson.
That's my laziness. I'm going to work on that. Thank you for reminding me. Thanks for putting me out there on that.
Sorry. But yeah, you know, you will be putting something up there, I'm sure, and people can check it out and see what's going on.
For sure. No, I'm going to go on top of that.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Jesse.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, another amazing interview with Jesse Quiñones. If you didn't hear our first interview, you can go back and listen. Back in November, I interviewed him, and that interview was more based on his script, which got a lot of attention at Sundance and other places, so I focused a lot on the screenplay, but we talked about the film, the casting process, those kinds of things. So if you want to hear more about this film and about the director, you can go back and listen to that, which I highly suggest. Actually, that interview with him was one of the most listened to interviews I've ever had. So he is definitely getting a lot of attention, and I hope people will listen, you know, to this one as well. So if you're out there and you're listening, please pass the show along and tell other people about this show, because I do the show, of course, to kind of inform people, educate them, you know, get the word out there, promote people. That's kind of why I do it. So the more people that listen, the better. Also, if you're a filmmaker and you'd like to be on the show, I'm currently booked up through the end of June, but I'm always looking for more projects to talk about. And once in a while, I get somebody on there that, you know, last minute that I need to put somebody in. So you can send me your stuff now. Just email me at ravenprods@yahoo.com. And I will have a bonus show tomorrow. I have a special show tomorrow, so you want to tune in. It will be at 3 o'clock tomorrow, so you want to check it out. Come here to Indie Streak. I will be back on the air tomorrow, and I will be announcing that show shortly. I'm going to be setting up the show on here on Indie Streak, so you'll see who the interview is with. That will be coming soon. And then, of course, next Sunday I will be back as well at 1 o'clock again. Also, guys, I want to let you know, if you're here in Florida, at the Cinema Paradiso down in Fort Lauderdale, there's a special event on May 28th, and the actor Tom Sizemore will be here at 6 p.m. on May 28th, and you can find out all about that on their website, which is www.fliff.com, which stands for the Fort Lauderdale International Film Festival. Yeah, that's about it, guys. I don't have any other news going on right now, but always go back and listen to the archives, because I've got, you know, a whole bunch of people I've interviewed, so check it out. All right, I'll talk to you guys next week, and like I said, I'll also be back tomorrow for a bonus show, so I will talk to you then. Thanks, bye.